I'm Professor Joseph Schofer. I'm the director of Northwestern University's Infrastructure Technology Institute. We're in Evanston, Illinois, and I'm your host for a podcast series called The Infrastructure Show with my co-host Tom Herman, who works for Vocalo.org, 89.5 FM, a user-driven website and radio station serving Northwest Indiana and Chicago metropolitan area.
Hi, I'm Tom Herman. I don't know a lot about infrastructure, so on this show, I'll be the average guy, the common denominator. So some of my questions might be basic. And to give you a very basic question right off the bat, what is infrastructure? What's your definition of infrastructure?
Well, I think it's important to start out with a definition. And right now, I'm going to define infrastructure as the built environment that supports and enhances life. It includes dams and bridges and roads and rail systems and airports and systems that generate and distribute energy and more than that. To sum up its importance in a single statement, I'd say that infrastructure is the visible and sometimes it's the invisible backbone of the country's civilization.
So how civilized are we or uncivilized?
I think we're pretty civilized. A way to think about it is that in this show, we're going to talk about the reality of America's infrastructure. We're going to try to be realistic about its condition, why it is the way it is, how things work, and what we can do about it. I'd particularly like to help us all understand what's important about infrastructure and why, at least to some of us, it's an exciting part of the world.
And how these things work for those of us who don't know too much about that.
Well, I'm really interested in learning how things work, and I can't say that I know how everything works, but I think it's important for us to keep our eyes open and try to understand what's going on around us.
So to put this conversation about 21st century infrastructure in perspective, how's the infrastructure been leading up to now?
I think it is important to understand something about the history of our country and of its infrastructure. Most of the infrastructure that we see around us was built in the 20th century. Some remains that was built before that, but most in the 20th century. And in that period of time, we had building codes and safety standards that were in place. The people that did the design and the building were skilled, licensed engineers, they had good science and good knowledge behind them, and materials over that period of time started out being relatively unknown, and they evolved not only in terms of their nature, but in terms of what we know about them. I think you can refer to the quote that's attributable to Isaac Newton and say, who is said to have said, if I've seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. And that applies to what we see in infrastructure today. That is, we've learned a lot about history. We've learned from the successes of past infrastructure components. You can look at some components around canals and bridges. One of my favorites is the Brooklyn Bridge, which is at this point 125 years old and still going strong. And we've also learned a huge amount from our failures. We've studied those failures systematically, and after each one, we've learned enough to do a better job with materials, with design, to ensure the future of the next piece of infrastructure that's built. Infrastructure projects built in the 20th and now the 21st century are better built because of that experience that we've had, because of what we learned, because we have not only new materials, but literally day by day we learn more about the materials that we've used for many centuries. And increasingly, our infrastructure is able to handle not only the expected events, but the rare and the unpredictable ones as well.
Why are we hearing so much about infrastructure problems in the news?
Well, we hear about infrastructure particularly when there's a large failure. The I-35 W Bridge in Minneapolis that went down in 2007, the levee failures in New Orleans as a result of Hurricane Katrina, we focus on them. And one of the reasons they get a lot of attention is because the infrastructure works reasonably well, and we don't have very many failures. The failures are rare, and we're interested in talking about rare things. These kinds of events heighten Americans' awareness that even the most excellent structures and systems must be continually maintained, monitored, and repaired.
And that costs money.
That costs a lot of money. And in many places in the United States, we're not spending enough money. And we haven't been spending enough money for a long period of time. So now let's start the show with the question, what's the condition of the infrastructure that we live with right now, and how safe is it? And our first guest is Casey Dinges, who's with the American Society of Civil Engineers, and he's in a position to give us a valuable overview based on ASCE's infrastructure report card, which the Society releases about every 5 years. And they've just released the most recent version in January of 2009. Thanks for joining us. Casey, we wanted to talk to you about the ASCE report card. And starting point is, could you give us an overview of what that is and why the Society felt it was important to do this?
Sure. The report card is a high-level view of 15 categories of infrastructure in the United States that are deemed critical to public safety and the economy. The Society first started doing the report cards in 1998, so I think this is about the fourth one that we've done since then. We did 2001, we did a little bit of an update in 2003, another report card in 2005, and now this one. I think the idea here is that as stewards of the nation's infrastructure, if you will, the civil engineering community, as represented by ASCE, thought it was important to start generating more public focus on the issue of the nation's infrastructure. It's such a ubiquitous issue. It plays out in so many people's lives in different ways. All levels of government are involved. The private sector is now even getting more involved. There was a feeling that something had to be done to start getting the public a little more interested in the issue. And at the same time, as you're getting the public more on board, you're starting to generate a little more pressure on political and legislative bodies to further engage and better engage the issue. So I think that's a pretty good summary.
Mm-hmm. So you just doing the report card now. What does it say? What grade are we getting?
Okay, we did an early release of the report card, and those were just the grades in late January. And the intent there was that there was congressional debate going on with the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, known as the stimulus bill, and infrastructure was part of the debate as a major component of that legislation. So about a $780 billion stimulus package was enacted, and about $130 billion was related to infrastructure. So the desire there was to just get the grades out to get to reinforce the focus that was starting to form on the issue. You know, we saw during the presidential campaign back in June, when then candidate Obama gave a speech on America's urban agenda to the U.S. Conference of Mayors at their annual meeting in Miami, we began to see further engagement of the issue by Mr. Obama. And then certainly after the economy cratered in the fall, and then there was more focus on what was then a second stimulus package, because we were already well past the initial Bush administration stimulus package of $160 billion in tax cuts. You then saw talk for another stimulus forming, and it was clear at the beginning of the administration we'd be dealing with this, and that is in fact what happened.
So what's the score? How did our infrastructure perform?
The overall score is a D, and that is an average grade across 15 categories, ranging from aviation to levees to transit and wastewater. There are 11 D's. There are only 4 C's. So this is not an impressive report card to be bringing home to anybody. The 5-year cost estimate or investment need is $2.2 trillion. I should point out, though, that roughly half of that figure is met through current programming at various levels of government and the private sector. So we're really looking at an infrastructure gap over 5 years of $1.1 trillion or approximately $220 billion a year.
So what you're saying when you say that half of it is met by current programs, that means that we're if we continue spending at the current rate, we'll cover half of that gap.
Right. And the the figure does not include future demand that may arise from continued population growth in the United States, which is still a reality for the United States, growing at about 1% a year.
Of the things that are getting D's, what are of most immediate concern to you in terms of the well-being of the country?
We haven't ranked the categories, but I can certainly throw them out there. And I think, in other words, we haven't ranked them in terms of move first on drinking water, move second on aviation. But I'll just throw them out, and I think people can, in their own minds, thinking of their own communities, can draw their own conclusions. But for instance, aviation had a D. Dams, I might point out there's still almost 1,900 high hazard dams in the United States. Dams have a D. Drinking water, a D minus. Energy, and there we're talking about the transmission grid, a D plus. Hazardous waste, a D. The inland waterway system, I think half the facilities on the inland waterway system are beyond their design life. There you have a D minus. Levees, certainly New Orleans levee failure is still in the back of people's minds, and people in the Sacramento area of California live with pretty constant fear of their levee system. That's a D minus. Roads, a D minus, and again, just conditions and urban congestion on roads in this country. We waste over 4 billion hours a year as a nation stuck in traffic. Schools were a D, transit a D, and wastewater a D minus. So the only decent grades, if you want to call C's decent, would be bridges, and notwithstanding the collapse of the 35W bridge in Minneapolis, Parks and Recreation a C minus, rail a C minus, and solid waste a C plus.
Just to give us a sense of this, of the curve that we're being graded on, how would you grade the infrastructure in other advanced countries? Are they also getting D's and C's, or do you see infrastructure in other advanced countries as getting A's and B's, grades that we're not getting?
That's a good question, and we just haven't gone that far with the report card effort. It's kind of enough of a challenge for us trying to get our hands around this and getting a sense of what is right for the United States.
Well, can you tell us procedurally how you do this job? How do you bring this information together? I'm a university professor. I struggle with grading sometimes, and I wonder how to do it right.
Yeah. Let me just say, I'll hit that question. Let me just say one other thing. About other nations, other engineering professionals in other nations have taken our lead on the report card as a useful tool. In the UK, the Institution of Civil Engineers, which is kind of the UK equivalent of ASCE, they did a report card in 2004, and the grades were somewhat similar, maybe a little better in a couple of categories. I know that Finland has done it, South Africa, Australia, and and other nations have expressed interest. So that doesn't get at your question of how do the countries compare, because that hasn't been done. But within countries, there seems to be interest in a tool like this to engage political leaders and the public on the issue. But to the question you just posed about how we kind of pull the research effort together, it really is a constant research effort. I mean, we do the report card roughly every 3 or 4 years, but during those intervening years, we are constantly looking at budget trends, reviewing any document, any story, any scholarly literature that is produced in any of these categories to try to stay on top of the issue during those intervening years. So the research is usually maintained by the staff of ASCE, and then every 3 years or so we'll pull together a panel of experts that bring expertise across the various categories of infrastructure to form an advisory committee to oversee the effort for about a year as we pull the grades together and the backup information to make the case to the public.
When these grades came out, how did they compare to grades that you've given in the past?
They've gotten, over the 10 years or so, a little bit worse. But I would say since 2005, the movement has mostly been a sideways movement. Maybe some slipping in a couple of categories, but a lot of just sideways movement. So in effect, really no significant progress.
Sure. And if you're giving a D, for instance, in a category, what's an A? What do you set as an A? An A would be the highest level that could that our current technology would allow for. What's an A?
It's hard for I really can't give you a good answer to that question, other than to say that we believe that if the funding gap were closed over 5 years, we would be able to move most of the grades up into the B category.
So the scale is basically it's partly based on how much you think ought to be spent and what could be accomplished if an appropriate amount were spent.
Yeah, funding, actual funding versus need is, one of the criteria we look at. We also look at the performance of the systems. And then performance versus need, and then also the actual conditions.
So I'm trying to understand if funding is really the only answer, or if there are technology and management challenges to be met or allocation issues that go beyond simply the aggregate amount of funding available.
I'll draw your attention to the detailed information that we'll actually be releasing Tuesday, March 24th. You'll be able to go to the ASC website, asc.org/report card, and get what we call the full report. In other words, if we had not rushed so much to get the grades out in January to impact the stimulus debate, everything would have been focused on this day in March. So that information will be coming out. It's not just a funding issue, and we do try to make that point. We hit on funding a lot because, there tends to be a lot of bobbing and weaving in this town and other state capitals around the country when it comes up, to addressing this issue and realizing that you have to figure out a way to pay for some of this stuff. But certainly funding is not the only way to go at it, and it would just simply not get us where we need to be. And what I mean is there are non-structural solutions that businesses and individuals can pursue that would help these problems. For instance, in the area that I live in Northern Virginia, there's a fair amount of carpooling that goes on. There are a number of flexible work schedules that I think businesses offer employees. There's also a fairly high degree of telecommuting that goes on, realizing you can't, these solutions don't work in all job situations. But there are other policies that don't involve, steel and concrete that can help get us, out of the situation we're in. And then I think one of you also mentioned the technology issue. Certainly figuring out better ways to manage what we have already is part of the set of tools that we should be using too. So those are all important aspects of this. I get a little concerned though when we see these debates in Washington, and people will point on those things. Hey, we can solve this problem or help fix the problem by not even spending any money. And some of those might be good ideas, but to suggest that it can be done without spending money is to be a bit unrealistic, to say the least.
You said that you guys put the grades out in advance of the complete report because you wanted to have an impact on the stimulus package. Did you feel like you had an impact, or was part of your reasoning in giving the grades that you might give them some signals as to where you thought whatever money was going to be allocated ought to be directed?
That turned out to be very much a political decision in terms of the breakdown between roads, bridges, airports, transit. You saw high-speed rail got, bumped up by a big number very late in the legislative process.
When you say it was a political decision, you mean a decision that was made not necessarily based on the best interest of the country, but what small interests of politicians?
I think political meaning, there's some, I think, just, some of the leaders on the Hill, I think, would guide we should be going, this amount into highways or this amount into bridges or this amount into transit or water, realizing all the constituencies you have to satisfy. You have to remember that the main motivation for the stimulus bill was to create as many jobs as you could as fast as you can. It was not a situation where the government was saying, okay, we want to spend $130 billion on infrastructure right now. What would be the most rational and holistic way to do that? They didn't really have time to sit down and think about it that way. It was all driven by how quickly can we get these projects moving and get people to work. So there was a realization, at least, that, hey, this is a good way to do something useful for the country and also put people to work. So that was the main driver of the issue. I think as we look ahead to later this year, when Congress looks at a major transportation authorization bill, another water resources development bill, dam legislation, there's already been a little movement on some legislation to bolster funding for the capital investments for the Clean Water Act. There's an aviation bill that's 2 years overdue. On those bills, I think you'll be able to see a more kind of long-term view taken. So, but back to your question on the stimulus, yes, I actually do think that the strategy paid off for AOCE. The President of the United States would frequently quote the report card in justifying the infrastructure investments that he was putting forth in the stimulus package. So certainly people in the White House took the report seriously, but they had already, I think, started focusing on some of ASC's information even before the November election, thinking back to earlier in the year when then-candidate Obama started to bring up infrastructure as one of his stump speech issues during the campaign.
So do you specifically track the effectiveness of an important effort like this? That is to figure out what effect you really did have.
That's a hard one. In other words, would it have been less than $130 billion had we not done this? It's really hard. It's really hard to say.
How do you deliver the information to the political process? I mean, obviously you've gotten a lot of good publicity on this, but do your members or does your staff testify before the committees of Congress? Do you lobby for this?
Sure. Yes. ASCE is a nonprofit organization. It has what's called 501c3 status. So we're a charitable organization which can actually accept tax-deductible contributions from contributors. And under federal law, the organization is allowed to do a certain amount of lobbying every year, as long as lobbying does not become a substantial part of the organization. And just from a budget perspective, the amount of lobbying that ASC does, while it's a lot for an organization, it's still well under 5% of the entire organizational budget. So, ASC is still mostly a technical and educational organization, but there is a strong presence in Washington. The report card was delivered to every member of the House and the Senate, the White House, most of the executive branch agencies were given it. And it will also be, resting on our website, so anybody can get it anytime if they want.
As I understand it, your organization gave the grade of D minus to drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
Should we worry about the quality of our drinking water on a day-to-day basis?
That's a fair question. I drink tap water every day myself, and it's certainly when you consider the value, the cost of tap water compared to bottled water, it's certainly one of the great bargains. The problem is that the system we have for drinking water is old and deteriorating in many parts of the country. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, the U.S. loses somewhere between 6 and 7 billion gallons of treated drinking water every day through leaking pipes. Water is certainly becoming a more and more valuable resource in the world. And, you know, when we have urban water systems that are conveying water that are over 100 years old and are well past their design lives, we certainly have some issues to look at. But no, in general, from a quality perspective, people should not be concerned.
Okay. Well, that's a comforting note to end on. Casey, we thank you very much. This is a really important volunteer effort from professionals who know a great deal about the infrastructure. We look forward to future advice from the American Society of Civil Engineers. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.